every mentor, teacher, and coach has a mentor, teacher, and coach, because they couldn't be where they are without someone helping them to where they are. In fact, the fastest way to get to where you want to be is find someone that's already there and ask them for directions, and then help other people get to where they want to be. And so to have Tim Story here, which some of you heard my story about Tim Story, no redundant, repetitive nature to it, but I do a lot of content. I get to meet a lot of world thought leaders, billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, tons of celebrities, athletes, and entertainers of world renown, not the United States renowned, the world's greatest. We mentioned my business partner, the only Black quarterback in the Hall of Fame. These are special people. Lee Steinberg, who's on his way, and hopefully he'll get here in time from Phoenix. These people come out of their way, not for me, but to pour into you. And so the best content that I do, in my opinion, is the conversations and Q&A that I have with Tim Story. He is sees things differently. He is able to reconcile the human experience with the infinite. Has taught me so much about my relationship with God and faith, and how much I limit myself, both my own self-image and my own imagination. So if everybody could give a huge round of applause for the incredible Tim Story.
Thank you.
So good. All right, man. Well, we love this rap. And so I want to start with limitations.
Yeah.
You know, I believe when I hear something and it makes me feel strongly, that it's God telling me you got to be aware of that.
Yes.
And, you know, I had a conversation about my big mission in life to empower over a billion people. And I told you how terrifying that is to me sometimes, especially to articulate it to people that they're going to think I'm crazy. And your response was simple. God does not give you an invitation without already knowing your limitations.
Yes. Perfect.
For you, when you first heard that or thought of it, what did it mean to you personally? And where do you see people being able to implement this understanding into their own lives?
Yeah. So I think whether somebody is religious or not, that we all feel some form of a calling. So I've now been to 83 countries of the world. And more than just speak, I like to communicate with people. And I'll ask people, like, do you feel like there's some kind of calling on your life, something bigger than yourself? And I will say that almost 100% of the people that I talk to around the world say, yes, they feel some type of calling. So what is a calling? A calling is an assignment. I believe that most divine callings are always slightly out of reach of the natural mindset and the natural talent. And so therefore, what I need is I need super on my natural to go to that supernatural divine calling. So whether you look at Nelson Mandela, who was incarcerated for about 26 years, he had to step into some type of divine. And Oprah Winfrey, who's one of my real good friends, her thing was, Tim, at 10, I knew I was Oprah, but I knew I couldn't pull it off on my own. And so as David is talking about, that I believe every one of us has been called, but God would never have given you the invitation if he was overly concerned about your limitation. In other words, we're going to get you there.
It's great.
That's so good. You know, I've been studying a lot of Dr. David Hawkins and power versus force.
Yes.
And understanding as I get older and older, how the force that I created counterforce and what my true power is and where it lies. And that understanding is critical to me in the way that I see things today. It's difficult not to apply force.
Yes.
And understand power.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does take wisdom, but this idea of faith, non-religious faith, that allows us to know to step into our power.
Yes.
For you, you're a very powerful person. And in the respect of that power, you've been able to impact so many other people. Have you ever mistaken power for force? And if so, you know, where in your life do you still maybe make the mistake of trying to force things?
Yes.
Or where does that relationship lie with time? Because I find time is integral in force.
Yes.
Right? When things aren't happening with faith or divine timing, we say, oh, I better make it happen. How is that relationship?
It's such a great question. And I love what you're studying now, because that's information that can change us. So let me give you guys kind of a cool story. When I was 9 years of age, I had a Yamaha Mini Enduro. That's 60 cc's, okay? And so in La Mirada, California, there was this area that had not been developed yet that we as young kids found that we could ride our dirt bikes there. So there were guys with like Yamaha 250s, Suzuki 185s that were slightly older than me. So David, there was this hill that was pretty big. And so I was with these three white kids I was hanging out with riding my motorcycle. And one just shot up that hill with a Suzuki 185. Another guy, Yamaha, at least 250. Another one, another Yamaha. They're like, just shot. So in my mindset, I could. Okay. So I started going up that mountain. I started running out of CCs. And I was halfway up that mountain. And all of a sudden, that little Mini Enduro just started taking me down. And the idea was, watch, in my mindset, I could go there, but my little Yamaha Mini Enduro did not have enough CCs to get me there. So here's what I like to say. You have the sight to a great life. Say sight.
Sight.
You have the right. Say right.
Right.
But you have to have the might. Say might.
Might.
And so this is what's happening in your life right now, because we're best of friends. The David Meltzer is on track to make history right now in the world. Clap your hands like that is true, okay?
So
we love to talk about the Norman Vincent Peales. We love to talk about the Think and Grow Rich. We're looking at a current day man who is in the middle of doing history. Now, so as his friend, he has the sight, he has the right, but the key is that he maintained that might, where you have that inner force that continues to take you up those hills.
So awesome. That parallels my belief of all successful people that I've encountered have a desire that they must be what they can be.
Yes.
Which is that might. And it doesn't go away, like for me, it did in my 20s and 30s. Just because you achieve something.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the more we achieve, the bigger God's hole becomes, because he's testing you for what you're going to fill it with.
I
said so many of us, including me, try to fill that God-sized hole that comes from success with everything but God.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people in history that I study and I find fascinating is Gandhi.
Yes.
And, you know, I've read the books on Gandhi. I watched the movie on Gandhi, because to me, it's incredible that this 90-pound person, who's probably one of the most peaceful people like Nelson Mandela, conquered the biggest power and force in the entire world at the time. People don't realize the British Empire fell because of this 90-pound passive person who probably understood this idea of power and force better than anyone.
Yes.
Because he trusted what was right. In the power of the collective consciousness, in the power of leadership, I believe there's power in doing the right things.
Yes.
Again and again. Even when the world's power, most powerful people are against you.
Mm-hmm.
Even physically against you. Killing people, etc. Never once did he raise his hand. He took basically down the biggest power in the world by starving himself and walking.
Brilliant. Yes.
To you, when you see that, is that possible today comparatively to the approach that the world leaders are taking?
Yeah, because I think that you are doing that. So when you think of traditional speakers, in the past, everybody thinks that their volume has to be high, that it has to be high volume. Somebody needs to yell from the stage. But I believe that the strength of a man or woman who is speaking is in the wisdom, is in the wisdom. And so many of the greatest leaders are not people that are pounding their chests. Some of the greatest CEOs, entrepreneurs, are not chest pounders at all. They are master in walking in wisdom, but also warring in wisdom. Some of us have read this whole Chinese philosophy book about this whole idea of the art of war. And so we're living in a time where a lot of young people do not want people telling them. They want to talk to them. Lift your hand if you agree. A lot of people that are moving from one place to another don't want somebody yelling, screaming at them, shaking them, and they're not always in the mood to do something just crazy and outrageous. But when you begin to get wisdom, because you have to get it, in the book of Proverbs, it says, get wisdom. It is more precious than gold. When you get wisdom and learn to apply wisdom and speak wisdom and walk in wisdom, you literally cannot be stopped. You literally cannot be stopped.
And speaking of wisdom, one of the things today that people don't realize is AI helps us with knowledge.
Yes.
It makes knowledge accessible at an extreme rate, with extreme value, but it's just knowledge. And we can access knowledge so easily today. But when people are afraid of this abundant knowledge or infinite amount of knowledge, they don't realize the opportunity if what they're really seeking is to turn that knowledge into wisdom.
Yes, so good.
And so as you speak about this idea, because I believe, and we'll say again and again until people get it, it'll be wisdom and faith that shorten the distance of resistance that human beings put in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
There is no resistance in the human experience other than the distance that you're putting into it.
Yes.
And interfering with. And through enlightenment, you can use wisdom and faith to shorten that distance. And if you want to know linear the distance to me, it's we receive uncertainty or a problem, a struggle, a setback, or a failure, all of us. And the solution already exists.
Yes.
It's just a lapse of time until it becomes a resolution, what I call a resolution. And most people make this lapse of time way too long because they don't know the difference between knowledge and wisdom, or they don't possess faith.
Yes.
Which is very Napoleon Hill-esque, right? What do you think definiteness of purpose is? It's faith. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't have a definiteness of purpose without having faith that there's something bigger than you that's protecting and promoting. Why is that true? Because if you don't have faith in this problem and solution relationship, the setback, failure, mistake is literally telling you there's no evidence, bro, you're getting there. Or most of the time it's worse than that. It's like, hey, buddy, the evidence is completely contrary that you're ever going to be where you want to be. And therefore, most people say, oh, well, I'm never going to get there.
So good.
Because there's no evidence, or the evidence is contrary, where people with wisdom say, oh, shit, there's no evidence, but I have faith that I'm protected and potent. Now I have to go seek knowledge to get the wisdom to shorten that distance of lapse of time between me and the solution that already exists, the resolution to what seems sometimes insurmountable. And you guys heard from Ben today, some of you who has hundreds of millions of dollars of exit, who in his story, again and again, most people without wisdom and faith, most people would have quit right before he succeeded from the very start. Right? He wanted to be a pharmaceutical rep. They said, bro, you can't even sell. Why don't you go work for Enterprise and ADP? So instead of saying, I'm never going to get this job, he went to work for Enterprise, said, this isn't for me, went to work for ADP, got the sales skill and got the pharmaceutical job. Then he got the pharmaceutical job and he wanted to be a heart device guy to make some real money. And they said, bro, you're never going to do it. Again and again, no, no, no. Finally, he wrote a letter to the guy and said, yes, yes, yes. And the guy said, no. He said, then you got a choice, bro. Either you're going to hire me or you're going to compete with me.
So good.
And the guy hired him. And then he takes that to the next level where he recognizes mm-hmm. a delivery mechanism for drugs, takes all the relationships of Art of the Cardiologist that he built all the years, and not only said, what medicine should we deliver for cardiology, but you guys are going to fund me.
Yes.
And instantly got the funding. Every step of the way, I see entrepreneurs every day go, oh, they said no. Oh, there's no evidence. Oh, I'm going to quit. Mm-hmm. And so in this shortening of the distance of resistance, to me, the key component isn't really faith, because people understand that. And that's a matter of your desire. It's understanding the difference between knowledge and wisdom. Because you can take as much knowledge as you want, and that's not going to, it's like discipline. There's a difference between discipline and devotion. Right? I'll repeat this again and again. Most people I meet are disciplined working to make money. Most people are disciplined to work to be healthy. Most people are disciplined to work to be with their families. But they get so busy working, they don't make any money. They get so busy working, they don't take care of their health. They get so busy working, they don't spend time with their family. Now, if you're devotional, now you're disciplined in a divine direction of where you think you want to be or better. You're aligning the meaning of the past. You're shortening the distance of resistance because you understand the difference between knowledge and wisdom.
So good.
So I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah.
Where you see with.
Can we clap for him?
Yeah.
So.
That difference.
I'm a person who loves to study communication, and I teach on communication. And that role that he just went on was pretty powerful. Yeah. And part of it is this, is that wisdom takes time. I want you to say that. Say wisdom takes time.
Wisdom takes time.
Wisdom is not something you can hack wisdom. Like everyone is trying to hack everything. What is the shortcut? There's no shortcut to wisdom. I promise you that. And even if somebody brags to me that my child, somebody literally told me this, reads 2 books a week. I was not impressed, because they're not retaining what they're reading. They are not retaining. So Dennis Waitley, who we knew, he talked about we learn 3 primary ways, education, conversation, and observation. Try that. Say education.
Education.
Conversation.
Conversation.
And observation.
Observation.
Okay, so by you taking the time to be connected to David Meltzer and his programs, what he does, for you to be here all day, some of you have been here all day, to be here tonight, this is not a waste of time, because you're learning from education, conversation, and observation. So that's how I learned. Compton, California, 7 people in a 2-bedroom apartment, lower-income family, and there's 3 top magazines in the area of business. One is Forbes, 2nd is Success, 1 is Fortune. I will be on the cover of one of them on April the 2nd. Not bad. You should probably clap, okay? So a lower-income kid who decided to get wisdom, to get wisdom. I didn't get it overnight. Education, conversation, observation. But once you get wisdom, all of a sudden it shifts the way you make choices. A choice is a selection. Man, if I can get you to get wisdom, it'll change your choices. All of a sudden you won't just be jumpy to move left, to move right, to do that deal, to do that deal. You really start to look at things different. You see this even in the power of the great quarterbacks. When they're in the pocket, they were smart enough to make the right choices because they had a lot of wisdom. Talk about that just for a minute. And even great quarterbacks having to make choices from that pocket.
Yeah, and I think in that wisdom as a quarterback, especially the ones that I work with, which are the best ever, Troy Aikman, Steve Young, and Warren Moon,
mm-hmm.
what people don't realize is that what you see in that pocket has nothing to do with what they're seeing right there. It has everything to the preparation side of it. The repetition of what they do, the consistent repetition every day in the divine direction.
Yes.
Even when each of those people,
yeah,
I was there, you know, Warren 6 years in Canada. He's an LA kid, not just in Canada, but in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Playing Canadian football. You think those guys didn't make a lot in the NFL back then? Imagine what he was making in Canada. Mm-hmm. While he knew he was the best quarterback of all time. And if you put together his statistics from Canada and NFL, he beats everybody still today. They did the sports, my dear friend who committed suicide from sports science, John Brankus.
Yes.
He did sports science on the spiral and proved scientifically that Warren Moon had the most perfect spiral of all quarterbacks of all time.
Yes.
Steve Young, when he signed the deal with the USFL, then went to the Niners, was sitting on the curb with Lee. You can ask him when he gets here. And Steve Young was crying to Lee, going, "They'll never sign me because they love Joe Montana. Lee, if you don't get this done by 7 a.m. tomorrow," and it was like 2 in the morning on the curb, He goes, "You're fired." And Lee said, "No problem. It's just math." Because they didn't understand the cap.
Yeah.
And they wanted Steve Young. They just couldn't or didn't think they could afford him. And Troy Aikman, on the other hand, was put under the same pressure to win a Super Bowl. I don't know if you remember what Troy Aikman's first season record was. Anybody remember? 1-15.
Wow.
1-15. Same as my other friend. Elway, and then, I'm thinking of Ryan Leaf. Ryan Leaf took that 1-15 a different way than Troy Aikman. Because he wasn't willing to prepare. And so when I think about a quarterback and I watch them in the pocket, I think about how prepared that quarterback is.
So if we could break this down for a second. So, the center hikes the ball to the quarterback, right? And he is in the pocket. He's got people blitzing that he didn't know were going to blitz. He's got people not blocking that he thought they were going to block. And in that moment, the quarterback has to really make the right choices. You take a Tom Brady. He could be down by 5 points with 2 minutes left. Did he not have that look like, "I'm still going to be okay"? Yeah. Is that the truth?
Or "I'm going to win," like Tiger Woods.
Okay, and why is that again?
For two reasons. One, the desire that he must be what he can be. And two, there is the same frequency between nervous and excited. For me, what I see in Tom Brady, Tiger Woods as well, is exemplary. Like, you never could imagine today that there was actually a bet most of the times when Tiger Woods played golf, Tiger Woods versus the rest of the field.
Yes.
Imagine how dominant as a professional to be you against all the other, in a game like golf, where the wind could blow.
Yes.
Is that incredible? And it's because Tiger Woods, I've never seen anyone, and Tom Brady, put more fear in other people that had the lead.
Yeah. So I want to throw out three words and let's see what we do with them. So revelation. Somebody say revelation.
Revelation.
Say conviction.
Conviction.
Say action.
Action.
So I personally believe that you must have a revelation of something to be great. Like the greatest chefs, they practice so hard and they finally got a revelation that, doggone it, I'm good at this. I'm good. And then that revelation dropped into conviction. And that conviction is, you know that you know that you know. Say that. Know that you know that you know.
You know.
So that's what we want from you for 2026, is that the revelation leads to conviction that you know that you know that you know. And then that conviction leads to action. It's not even like you have to try to put it on.
Right.
It's so in you. You just go out there and you manifest the revelation that's inside you. The revelation, conviction to action. When I say that, what goes to your mind?
Thinking of you speaking. Because I'm backstage with you.
Yeah.
On the biggest stages we've been.
Yes.
From Limitless to the Aspire Tour to all the biggest stages, arenas.
Yes.
Stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are so non-convicted backstage.
Yeah.
Right? Even some of the greatest speakers.
Mm-hmm.
You could see it. They're sitting there still 2 minutes before preparing. Can't be bothered.
Yeah.
If you see Tim and I backstage, it's like tapping, Tim, you're up.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's like, oh, what am I talking about again?
Yeah, we're chatting with people.
Yeah.
We're playing with our friends' kids.
Right. And other people are like, don't let anybody in the green room.
Exactly. Right? All day long.
Big,
yeah.
Big names, by the way.
And they're pacing.
Yeah.
Some have headphones on.
I'm thinking of these guys that do that have had a revelation.
Yes.
But they're not in the realm of conviction.
No, they're not.
They're not ready to at any time know that I'm ready, like Tom Brady is ready or Warren Moon is ready.
Wow.
Like they just know it and you can feel it backstage. And I told Colleen this because they had this great question. I don't understand how being worried and being excited are the same frequency. I said, well, actually, when you realize the whole key to life is being at ease in the flow,
yeah,
connected through God, that excitement actually interferes with your flow. It's an interfering energy, which took me a long time to realize because I'm such an optimist. I'm a toptimist. I'm like, how could like being super positive about the future, you know, be an interfering energy compared to worrying? And I said, the difference in the frequencies, there's no difference. They're both the same frequency. They both, if you're prepared, you'll be excited. If you're not prepared, you'll be worried.
So powerful.
But the difference of worry, where there is a distinction, is worry is actually a duplicative negative, because at least when you're excited, you're wishing for what you do want.
Yes.
The problem with worrying is it's not only interfering with your flow, but it's actually wishing for what you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a duplicate negative. If anybody's ever been in school, I can prove it mathematically that go ahead, worry about this question being on the test. I promise you, whatever question you're worried about will be on the test. It's guaranteed.
Yeah.
And so stop doing that with all the tests that God gives you.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I'm okay with you interfering with excitement. I'd prefer to be enlightened, which I'm not at the level because I do. We're very much at ease backstage.
Yes.
But there becomes like right when I'm on stair number two, about to walk on stage and the cameras and the smoke. And I got to admit, the excitement hits me.
Yeah.
And then I got to go ahead and get rid of that so I can be at ease and channel or be in the flow.
Okay.
So I think of that.
Let's talk about this idea of how we all have assignments. We all have assignments. I want you to catch this. So I look at my friend David here, and I said to him over here, I said, it is so your time, and don't look that it's going to go down. You're going to keep riding the wave, the wave, the wave, the wave, the wave, the wave. Now, most guys in our field are not going to say that to him because they're going to see it as, I like him. Maybe what could we do together? How could we collaborate? But they're not just going to cheer him on just because they love him. That's just how it works in many fields. How many see my point with that? Because of competition. Now, his skill set, his gifting to this world is different than mine. We all have our own assignment. So how powerful is this? If we can get you to get a revelation of what is really your assignment. I call it the difference between a good idea and a God idea.
Mm.
So I was just a couple of days last week with Grant Cardone. That's been my good friend for 17 years. I don't want to be Grant. He's got a big airplane. Congratulations. He's got a house in Malibu. Congratulations. He just, you know, was living in, I bought Tommy Hilfiger's house in Florida. Congratulations. Congratulations. I don't want to be him. I don't want to be Ed Milet. I don't want to be Jay Shetty. I don't want to be Brené Brown. Are you with me? I want to be the best version of myself, of what is my assignment. And man, if I can find my God idea, which I did when I was 17 years of age, I don't want your God idea. I'm going to applaud you. I'm going to high-five you. I'm going to cheer you. I'm going to text you. Clap your hands if you like this way of thinking. That makes sense. So when I talk about that, what goes to your mind? The assignment, finding your own assignment.
for me, it's forgiveness. And let me explain why. You know, I spent a lot of my life studying gratitude as the most powerful, easiest, most impactful thing that we could do. But I didn't understand its relationship to forgiveness. And so what happens is if we don't understand forgiveness, we can't pray for other people's happiness.
Ooh.
And I think it's also a testament to a more than enough understanding of the universe that it's easy to pray for others' happiness and success.
Mm-hmm.
When you have faith, there's more than enough of everything for everyone. If you don't, it's very difficult to say, hey, Ed, congratulations for getting that job that I should have got.
Yeah.
Because I believe there's only one stage that we can speak on. No,
mm-hmm.
There's more than enough stages for everyone.
Yes.
And the more that you congratulate and forgive, and who are you forgiving? When you pray for someone else's happiness, you're forgiving yourself for the thoughts and the words that you may have interfered with because they do go through your head. I remember one time specifically with Ed, they told me, hey, it's between you and Ed Milet. It was like a $50,000 speaking engagement.
Yeah.
And, you know, they usually ghost you. They don't have the courtesy to call you and say, hey, we chose Ed. So, you know, Nick's chasing him and then they're like,
yeah,
finally get back. Hey, sorry, it was Ed. And I literally thought immediately,
mm-hmm.
Why'd they choose him? I'm so much better. Mm-hmm. Right? Comparison being the thief of joy. All of a sudden I'm going down that. And then after I've worked myself up and then worked through the forgiveness, I realized that I couldn't even speak on the day that they were hired for. How many times does that shit happen?
Yeah, that's so good.
And so I use forgiveness to pray for other people's happiness. And forgiveness that I'm forgiving myself for interfering with my higher self. That I have a need to be right or offended or separate, inferior or superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful about a situation,
yeah.
A comparative situation that is just illustrating that I have to work on myself. And so now I'm going to forgive myself for what I did, said, thought, felt, or believed about a situation that's limiting me, interfering with my higher self, instead of one when we congratulate, we are actually elevating ourselves and increasing the possibilities and promotion that God has for us. Every time you are able to congratulate like Tim does and inspire, even if you feel there is some sort of interference, you are elevating yourself. When you elevate others, it's mathematical, it's quantum physical, it's metaphysical. You can go through a whole bunch of different sciences, philosophies, and theories. They'll all support elevate others to elevate yourself.
I think one of the keys that I see in David's life is that he is a servant. And just so you guys know, you don't see that very often, even at restaurants.
Still does make sense? Waiter.
Right? Even at CVS. They, you know, I'm old enough. I don't want to check myself out. Come on. Where's the CVS person? Somebody help me. So David is a servant and he's looking to help your dream come true. Watch how powerful this is. His vision is to see your vision come to pass. And so when you come from a place of servanthood, giving away books, giving away his number, sharing his time, so many of the people that work with him are not people that are paying to work with him. There's no back and forth of currency. He is behind the stage at Aspire just chatting with people. Maybe I can connect you with the person. Maybe someone from my team can help you. There's something about sowing and reaping. Who still believes in that? That you reap what you sow, okay? So one of the things I would like to challenge all of us about is really get back to that place of servanthood, because probably a lot of you started there. And when you start to serve people and you look to make somebody else's life better and you walk into a room and it's not like, who can I meet to take me to the next place, but who could I serve? Who could I help? Who can I encourage? Watch the laws of this world come back to you because you reap what you sow.
Yeah. I just want to add one thing that we spoke earlier just in the context of being repetitive and annoying and honest to people. But one of my favorite things to talk about in this realm is that don't forget when you receive that you are allowing someone else to be able and capable of helping you.
So good.
And so I believe that when I am able and capable of helping any one of you, I'm closest to God. That is when I'm at my higher self. I don't think it was an accident that my mom purposely named me David Meltzer, which means beloved servant.
Mm-hmm.
And when I didn't, as a young man, live up to my name, she would be the first one to point it out. Live up to your name, son.
Yeah.
All the time. That was her way of saying, I don't care how much money you make, you idiot. You are a servant and you're not acting like one.
Mm-hmm.
You're buying things you don't need to impress people you don't like. That's not the David Meltzer who I named. And it came back to kick me in my ass. But I just want to remind you that in the context of being able and capable of helping others, which means you constantly have to receive yourself, or else you're not going to be able and capable of helping more people. You have to receive more. If you're in a zero-sum game and you have zero, you help less people.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 100 times or 10x like Grant, he can help 10 times as many people. So there is a relationship to God that exists in giving and receiving. And I love the way that Dr. Wayne Dyer put it when he mentored me.
Yeah.
And he made it biochemical and anatomical as well as spiritual. He said, when you give, you get a dose of happiness. Dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins are released. When you receive, you get a dose of happiness. Dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. He said, but where the miracle really lies. Remember, this is why we expect miracles, because of who we are. We will receive miracles because of who God is. And you will then be able to offer miracles because of who you walk with. But in the context, those who witness, and you see this all the time because of content today, which is why for me, post-production content is so valuable, because those who witness giving and receiving get a dose of happiness. You watch a movie and there's a scene with giving or receiving, you're getting a dose of happiness. It is the only infinite doggy biscuit that God gives you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? What does he give you when you don't act appropriate? Cortisol. What does he give you when you act aligned with God? Dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, mm-hmm. endorphins, the greatest healing chemicals that exist. It is literally God telling you not to demean our human existence, but when you do the right thing, God gives you a doggy biscuit and says, good boy, mm-hmm. I'll give you more of this stuff that's going to heal you. And when you're a dick, he gives you cortisol.
Yeah.
Right?
So good.
Which is a spanking.
Yeah.
And if you keep getting spankings, pretty soon you're in real big trouble. You get inflamed and you get dis-ease.
Yes. But in fairness to all of us, we're living in a society that we have to watch two things, what I call the eye gate and the ear gate. The eye gate is what you read, what you see, what you witness. The ear gate is what you hear. I guard my eye gate and I guard my ear gate. I don't hear a lot of stupid stuff. And if I do, I will renew my mind to take the stupid stuff out. And so this spirit of competition is out there like I never saw in my generation. We didn't have TikTok. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have Instagram. We didn't have social media like that. So
let's be honest. We didn't have computers.
Yes, we didn't have computers.
Or phones.
You're right. Yes. So
color TV. Let's get real. Or a remote control.
Yeah, so it wasn't coming at me every minute of what all these guys were doing and these amazing lives that they're living. So you can make a choice starting tonight to guard your eye gate and your ear gate. And renew your mind of who the heck you really are. That has really done something huge for my life. It's one thing to get in big rooms. It's another thing to stay in big rooms. I've stayed in big rooms for 44 years. That's not easy to do. I stayed in them. I was not in, then kicked out. I was in, and I stayed in. And part of it is that whole attitude of being a servant.
So good. Does anybody know who Sidney Frank is? Anyone know who Sidney Frank is? So Sidney Frank started a small brand, and it was called Grey Goose Vodka. And he owned Sidney Frank Distribution, and probably one of the greatest entrepreneurs that mentored me. San Diego guy, hired me to be a consultant. And I remember as a young, arrogant guy, people were saying things, came into Sidney's office, and they were more dramatic, you know, political things about people in the office.
Yes.
And I was a young executive, and he held up his hand and he said, stop. I don't want to hear any of this. Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And I was like, what kind of leader is that? Like, yeah. Don't tell me bad news. Don't give me any negative. I don't want anything negative around me. But as I got older and learned from you about the eye gate and the ear gate, I realized, no, Sidney Frank had gathered wisdom that I hadn't gathered yet. I had knowledge. He hired me for my knowledge, but he also was wise enough to know that I didn't have wisdom. There's a saying, the longer you go, the less you know. Well, when you know that you know less, that's when wisdom actually has come upon you. Mm-hmm. And so for Sidney to say that, I think about it all the time because I'm constantly telling my kids and my wife and my employees around me, no, cancel. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear it. My whole unwinding routine to me, which is the key to my success of sleep, is I will put my mind, body, and soul in a position to recover and access information to elevate my awareness for the next day. Those who recover better always perform better. And those who have more information have a greater awareness for greater statistical success. And so my whole unwinding routine is the eye gate and the ear gate. I don't want to watch the housewives, right? If anybody has any serious relationships, I will tell you one thing that bugs the crap out of me about a serious relationship. And it goes both for men and women, but since I'm a man, I'm going to say it's my wife.
Yeah.
I've been married 28 years. I don't know why, but right before I go to bed, these are the questions I get from my wife. How are we going to afford this? What about so-and-so? She's Bubba. Oh my God. I was like, and this is what I want to hear right before I go to sleep.
Yeah.
How are we going to pay for college? That's a shitty fucking question before you go to bed. Something I can handle in the morning, right? So I had to protect the eye gate in the ear. And I will tell you, if you're going to start with your unwinding routine. Protect yourself before you go to bed because there is a period of a conscious continuum of huge value.
So true.
Where you're accessing, your conscious is out of the way. If you put yourself at ease when you sleep, not only will you recover better, which will guaranteed, anybody will tell you, those who recover better perform better. I have to explain statistically what this means because it's been my success for so long. When I played football, there was tons of people that if they were at 100% with my talent, I was at 60% of their 100% was my best. Just because of my skills and my own strength and size. But where I was able to compete was I was always playing at 100% of my 60%.
Yeah.
And the guys that they're 100%, they were playing at 50% because they weren't recovering and they weren't accessing the same information or wisdom about the game of football intelligence. So although at our peaks, they were 40% better than me, I could compete and sometimes beat them because I was at 60% and they were at 50%.
So good.
And so if you don't realize the power of recovery and access when you're sleeping and the importance of your eye gate and ear gate, especially in what I call an unwinding routine, I will tell you, your tomorrow starts tonight. I'll repeat this. Your tomorrow starts tonight.
Yes.
And your unwinding routine is the start of your day when you start recovering and accessing for the activities of tomorrow, when you awake. And then you're grateful again. I want to thank Tim, by the way, for all the beautiful compliments and questions.
Yeah.